not what it was I actually wanted. See, the bard thing wasn't my idea. My dad had a thing for lutes, and my mom ran away with an accountant, so I was left with calloused fingers. For the longest time, it was just me with the whole castle, and I tried all sorts of things, archery and sewing and spinning and baking pies, but I never really found out what it was I wanted to do with my life. And now, here I am on a real quest, almost like a real bard.
You are a real bard, Fia said.
Argabella looked down and pinged a string on her lute. Up ahead, Bargalos shuddered visibly at the sound.
Maybe,
Argabella whispered.
Sorry about that. It's been so long since I've talked to anyone, and even before the whole rabbit thing, I was always shy and...
Come now, Fia reached down and squeezed her hand. You don't have anything to apologize for. We're all in new territory. The morning wood is terribly splendid, isn't it? If a bit inconvenient.
I'd rather see the gentle slopes of the Honeymelon Hills,
Argabella confessed.
All these towers and trees. Well, they do insist upon themselves, don't they?
Fia couldn't help smiling back. They walked along effortlessly, as if each step bore them miles. Soon Fia heard laughter and music riding the air, and smelled herbal smoke wafting through the trees. Normally, in Fia's experience, the road would become a wider road, which would lead into a filthy hamlet or overbuilt city. But in Morningwood, the village grew organically out of and among the trees, doors appearing in huge trunks and the paved walkway splitting off and leading away to buildings that were like nothing Fia had ever seen. Walls of moss and crystal and bark were inset by stately stained glass windows glowing with all the colors of fall. But they kept on along the main road, and soon their destination appeared. The biggest tree of all, wreathed in furry green vines and dripping with soft, purple wisteria. Fia had to agree with Argabella. It was a bit ridiculous. Standing in front of the grandly carved doors were the first elves Fia had encountered besides Bargalos and Sylvan Adriel. It was strange, actually, to have traveled so far through a city without seeing anyone. These new elves were fierce and utterly encrusted in the most beautiful armor Fia had ever seen. Royal guard, she had to assume. If not for the magic she'd already witnessed, she might have challenged them to a fight for their armor. But she was wiser now. The few pertinent bits of her own chainmail were vastly preferable to choking to death on the glimmering effulgence of the morning wood.
"Prince Bargalos, hasn't your father warned you about bringing home strays?"
one of the guards asked.
"No,"
Bargalos said, sounding very petulant and unelfish indeed.
"I mean, yes, but that's not what I'm doing, Dribble Sprig. This is official business, really important stuff. Just open the door."
"It would be my pleasure, your highness," the guard said, but he was smirking.
Each of the guards took hold of a brass handle and dramatically threw open the double doors.
"Announcing Prince Bargalos and a collection of livestock, your highness,"
the guard shouted, and Fia had to admit it sounded very elegant and royal, aside from the insulting part. The tree had appeared to have about the same circumference as a small hut, but once opened, its breadth might have rivaled a cathedral. The trunk was hollow and went up forever, so high that birds flittered to and fro, but not any common birds. These had been enchanted so that when they had to airdrop a plop, they only rained glitter down upon the elvish court. A carpet of lush grass led up to a throne of darkest ebon, upon which sat King Rodmore of the Elves. He was the most stately, otherworldly, downright smarmy creature Fia had ever seen, robed in ermine with a crown of ice and eyes to match. Seeing the look on his face, Fia pulled her cloak more tightly around herself and sidled slightly behind the wagon, keeping the unconscious and foul-mouthed goat hidden. For all her strength and bravery, she wouldn't cross this king, and she only hoped Gustav wouldn't get the chance. The king of the elves sighed a mighty sigh.
"Honestly, Bargalos,
We've talked about this. You're too old to keep bringing home whatever pathetic things you find in the forest, he said, stroking a beard so long and silky that Toby's envy was palpable.
But father,
Bargalos whined,
you said I had to sire heirs, and there are three, I think. Yes, three females among them. That's what, six heirs? Oh, they have two each, is that not so, or am I thinking of opossums? In any case, I seek only to do my duty.
Bargalos knelt and bowed his head.
My king,
Toby cried, stepping forward with his arms raised, and Fia smacked her head at his foolishness.
I am the Dark Lord of Borix, Tobias Fitzherbert, and I wouldst parley with thee.
What did ye just say? Borix? Parsley? I swear these humans,
the king said.
The Dark Lord of Borix,
Toby repeated slowly as if talking to a moron.
My party and I pray, beg thee for passage through yonder fair morning wood, kissed by dawn's lashes dew.
It's always afternoon here, if you hadn't noticed,
the king said. Then to Bargalos he added,
I like this one. Had a parrot like this once. Said the darndest things.
Then louder to Toby, indulgently,
pray continue, my good man.
I already said it.
Toby tried to keep his arms up, but his sleeves kept falling down as his robes were capacious indeed.
We're on a quest, and we wish only to pass peaceably through your fair domain.
The king leaned forward, his long ears quivering and his eyebrows drawn down in frustration.
My old parrot was a better conversationalist. I tire of this, Bargalos. Get them out of my sight and do your duty. I want a full report in the morning, then send them on their way with whatever they need. Can't have humans dying in the forest again. The bones get all tangled up in the ivy, if you recall.
He waved a royal hand, and Bargalos stood and motioned the party to follow him out a side door, which they did with much haste.
Oh! And Bargalos!
The king called.
Yes, father!
The king sat back, looking hawkish and shrewd and maybe a little hungry.
Be sure and collect the toll. Humans can't expect a release from the morning wood without paying it proper homage.
Begging your pardon, but what is the toll exactly?
Toby asked.
All your cheese. We have so few dairy animals in the forest, you know. Tough to find even a chintzy cheddar around these parts. Now don't fret. You can easily find more on your travels, whereas we cannot. Just leave your cheese, and in return you may expect a swift and satisfying discharge from the morning wood.
Toby deflated like a melting brie, but Fia was overcome with relief. At least, unlike Toby, the king of the elves didn't want someone's internal organs. Perhaps they would escape unscathed, after all. 10. Uncomfortably near a giant uvula. The next morning, the party didn't exit the morning wood so much as gush from it in a torrent of magical effluvium. This was terribly awkward for a variety of reasons, and they soon found themselves at a fork in the road. Normally, Argabella didn't approve of the phrase, found themselves, because she had obviously never lost track of her own body or mind before. This time, however, it rang true. Whenever the elves did their magic and turned the world inside out, she did in fact lose herself temporarily, and generally rediscovered herself in the process of vomiting. Argabella's opinion of magic went down several notches. What was the point if it always made her nauseated and kept spoiling perfectly nice cloaks? At least Fia was there each time it happened, patting her back in a reassuring way and holding back her ears. Straightening up to wipe her mouth and consider the path ahead, Argabella couldn't help thinking that forks in the road were rather gloomful things. Since the path diverged, that meant one had to choose, and choosing meant that opportunities were lost forever. In making the choice, one literally murdered possibilities, which didn't seem very fair or nonviolent. However, forks in the road were also songful things. Argabella liked to sing about them when she was feeling especially thankful, because they illustrated how our choices shape our lives, rather than some goddess playing at puppets. And perhaps because people were aware of that, perhaps because some people did and others definitely did not want to have the sorts of encounters bards sing about, forks in the road were also places where arguments tended to break out, and one broke out soon after they bade farewell to the elves. Argabella had strummed only one chord before her somewhat gloomful, somewhat thankful song about forks was casually destroyed by what began as nonsense and ended up as nearly a brawl.
"Cur!" Poltro said. "Elves? Know what I mean?"
"Not really," Argabella answered, wanting to be supportive. "But you seem glad to be gone. I thought you were excited about spending time with Bargalos. Was it not pleasant?"
"Depends on what you consider it to be," Poltro muttered. "He just had me brush his hair for a while, and at first I thought that was okay because he seemed to like it. He was moaning and carrying on, and that's pretty good, right? But then he shouted a bit about his father, cried in my lap, expressed a universal fear of crevasses, and fell asleep. And that wasn't any fun for me, was it? Nothing proper to eat in the room either, just some dried fruits. And when I peeked outside to ask for help, they told me to get back in there with Bargalos the Snore Prince. Well, I didn't sign up for a dried peach. No, I didn't. And I won't ever have anything nice to say about elves, no matter how shiny their hair is, you can be sure."
"That's not so bad, comparatively," Toby said. "The rest of us were dumped unceremoniously in a horse stall, locked in with the oxen,
and given nothing but a musty bucket of water and a tuft of elvish hay to go around. And our own food stores were infected with glitter," Fia added. "We didn't know if it was the pleasant, friendly sort of glitter, or the bad, actually bird droppings glitter, or the oh maybe we'll choke to death glitter."
"And those blasted cheese thieves!" Toby howled, arms waggling in the air for emphasis.
"Not this again, I beg you," Fia moaned. "All night, nothing out of this one but a whinging about lost Pecorino."
"Oh, and I'm the only whiner?" Toby shot back. "What about your soliloquy about how straw tends to wedge into one's most personal crannies?"
"There wasn't a lot of sleep,"
Argabella said soothingly.
"The night was rather wakeful, and literally no one brushed anyone else's hair. But perhaps if we keep moving, we might find some cheese and hairbrushes."
"We need to take the Western Fork and head south from Hump Tulips to Malefic Beach."
Fia stepped boldly toward the cleft in the road, her form rippling in ways that Argabella couldn't help noticing.
"I agree,"
Gustav said, pausing as he chewed a strip of elvish leather.
"Not because I'm big on maps, but because she's the only one who doesn't want to eat me."
But the crepuscular lord was having none of it.
"South! Are you insane? Our only choice is to take the eastern fork to the city of Grogan, where we can replenish our cheese stores.
And incidentally,
not die.
Everyone knows the south is the more dangerous route. I'm for not dying and a nice, groggish gruyere."
Poltro took his side, saying,
"That would be gouda."
and Snort giggled at how successfully she delivered one of the oldest cheese puns in history.
"We can't afford the time!"
Thea raged. Her chainmail bikini tinkled a little bit as she jiggled around, and Argabella thought it a winsome sound.
"We need to get the sandwich working her magic on the farm boy as soon as possible!"
"We'll have no time left at all if we're dead,"
Lord Toby pointed out. "That road to the south is almost sure to kill us, and we'll be no better off than your farm boy."
"This south is sure to kill us? Ah, what foolishness! You're talking about silly stories!"
Fia shouted, advancing on the hedge wizard, but he held his ground.
"True stories, silly or not, there's something deadly lurking around the Titan toothpicks. Very few people ever return from there, as you well know.
Very few people can fight like me, or..."
Fia trailed off.
"Make almost crackers, like you,"
Argabella finished. Toby ignored Fia and turned to Argabella.
"You!"
She cringed, ears drooping, eyes watering, nose twitching. She'd been afraid someone would draw her into the argument, but was surprised to discover that someone was herself. Argabella desperately wanted to support Fia, but at the same time, it didn't do to rouse a wizard's anger. It was frustrating how the curse made her even more twitchy and fearful than she'd been before, which was saying a lot. She'd never done well with conflict, but now it made her want to dig holes and dart under bushes, which wasn't considered socially acceptable. Lord Toby's eyes widened, and his scraggly chin hairs waggled to impress her with the import of his next words.
"Look, Argy, my dear, you must break the tie because it's 2 against 2, so shall we go south and die a horrible, shrieking death at the hands of some cruel monster? Or go east and enjoy some cool monster?"
Argabella quivered like a pudding. Everyone was staring at her, waiting for her answer. Everyone except Poltro, who frowned and held up a finger.
"Hang on, my lord,"
she said.
"I think Cutter told me about questions like these. Isn't that one of those either-or thingies? A fella you see, or false canary, or..." "A fallacy,"
Fia pounced.
"A false binary. That's exactly what it is. There are many more possible outcomes than the two he gave you. A horrible shrieking death does not necessarily await us in the south. In fact, I'm sure it doesn't. And I don't think you can even get monster cheese in Groggen."
Argabella's ears perked up and she straightened her shoulders a bit.
"You're right. You can't,"
she said.
"It's too low-fat, and therefore banned by the Earl of Grunting, who sure does like his lipids. He had me sing a song about it once."
Lord Toby growled in frustration.
"Gah! What is even happening? We are talking about death here, as in the end of your life."
He pointed to the road leading south, first with his hand, then with his almost beard pointed as well to make sure no one had missed a vital bit of body language.
"And our death is that way.
So let's not go there, okay?
Come on, Argabella."
"Yeah, come on, Argabella,"
Fia said, her voice uncommonly gentle and a soft smile on her face.
"I've heard such wonderful things about the Titan toothpicks. They're supposed to be beautiful, shining pillars of stone with ribbons of color shot through them that sparkle in the sun. It would be the sight of a lifetime and inspire such sublime music. Don't you think?"
Argabella thought she might agree to do most anything, even swim with the man-eating jellyfish of the awful salty sea, if Fia would just keep smiling at her like that.
"That sounds wonderful,"
she breathed.
"Let's all go seek a horrible shrieking death together."
Gustav laughed.
"Ha ha! That's perfect. I like you, Rabbit Girl. Much more sensible about the world than my former Pooh Boy.
Lord Toby spun on his heel, shaking with rage, and after a few steps, threw back his head and bellowed, green bolts shooting from his fingers into the sky. He covered his head with both hands, and that was the only warning the others received before a hail of smoking crusts of bread fell down all around them, sizzling hunks thudding onto the turf.
"Now it's raining toast?"
Gustav said.
"That never happened back at the farm. I mean, who's even heard of toast showers before? Is that what you'd call this? Maybe a bread squall? A loaf storm?"
He reached out tenderly with his goat lips and nibbled on some.
Pumpernickel. It's nothing like a pair of filthy suede shoes, but it's not bad, I guess.
Lord Toby's shoulders slumped, his anger spent, and he flapped one arm toward the south.
Fine. You all go first. I'll follow behind, so that when death comes, the last thing you'll hear is me telling you I told you so.
Fia flashed a grin at Argabella.
Thank you, she said.
The bard stood tall and smiled. The fighting was over, and it was easy to speak her mind again.
You're welcome.
While Poltro got Moxie and Doxie headed in the right direction, Argabella hoped there wouldn't be many more of these forks in the road. It almost made her long for her lonely days in the Earl's enchanted castle, because sleeping people did not get into arguments or force her to take sides. But, she reflected, sleeping people didn't smile at her either. The good feeling ebbed away quickly after they swung south from Hump Tulips, because signs began to appear alongside the road, an entire worryful series of them. They were brimful of sage advice, saying things like,
"Turn back now or die,"
and, "No, really, you will die," and, "Can you even read? I said you will die if you don't turn around." Toby cleared his throat significantly once he saw them.
In light of this new intelligence, can we reconsider this course of action?
Fia scowled at him.
No, we can't. For all we know, you conjured these up to mess with our heads.
The Dark Lord snorted derisively.
I excel at summoning yeasty foodstuffs, but have never in my life even attempted to conjure a series of weathered signs planted by the road, overgrown with years of weeds.
Argabella could feel her shoulders hunching in the silence that followed and reached for something positive to say.
Your eldritch crackers remind me of things that are delicious, she said.
Toby's eyes narrowed in condemnation.
I don't think he's ready to forgive you,
Poltro all but sang.
But I do so admire his magic and his snacks,
Fia grinned.
So you're saying you're his biggest flan?
Enough,
Toby shouted.
You're all nuts.
A beat passed before Gustav whispered,
Don't be so crudite.
Toby crossed his arms in a huff, and Fia winked at Argabella, who couldn't help grinning. She'd never had someone stand up for her before, much less have an entire group of friends band together in such a punful way. Toby's anger with her was now stretched over the entire group, and a warm sort of feeling spread out from her belly. Relief! That's what it was! But it didn't last for long. Another grouping of three signs appeared later in the day.
It came from the Titan toothpicks.
And?
It ate them all with mustard.
And?
Oh, gods, why? Turn back, you idiots!
Now, really, this is folly,
Lord Toby began.
Don't you believe me yet?
Fia made a chopping motion with her hand.
No! We are saving time, and these signs are years old. Whatever was there has got to be gone by now.
I'm intrigued,
Gustav said.
You don't typically hear of monsters bothering with condiments. The stories I've heard imply that they adhere to a paleo diet, preferring their foods in a raw, natural state.
What does it matter? Lord Toby snarled. Either way you're eaten.
Except for me. I can run faster than all of you, Gustav said. I'm counting on you to put up a fight and give me a chance to escape in the resulting brouhaha. Fail me not, ye fat and sassy, slow-moving monster chow!
Unless you get suddenly frightened and faint, Toby said nastily.
Look, it's all about genes. I got fainting genes, but I also got beard genes, so who's the real winner here?
With a prissy, Lord Toby set to brooding silently while making many dramatic gestures to ensure that everyone knew he was brooding. Argabella began to understand that Lord Toby was a champion brooder, and that if there were a sulky Olympics, he probably would get silver and then brood about it. They encountered no more signs after that, and the tension slowly drained away, especially after they had eaten that evening and woke up again in the morning perfectly safe. It was, in fact, perfectly lovely, Argabella thought, as the days passed, perfectly in peace. They had the road to themselves, and the rich green land qualified as bucolic. Sure, there were ruins of old villages here and there, but they were so ancient that they looked artful, and as if they had been placed there to improve the scenery. Idyllic scenery that didn't have very many animals in it, even insects. The bard supposed that was a leading indicator of danger, but didn't want to bother Fia with her concerns. Time had passed while she'd been trapped in the castle, and perhaps things had changed in the land outside, including food chains. Moxie and Doxie made good time pulling the wagon, and those with the capacity for speech talked of many things while they traveled, including the coastal delicacies unique to Malefic Beach they would like to sample, such as poached pepperfish in sea-salted butter pumpkins and spicy clam biscuits, and for the less meatful folk, battered and fried creme-filled sponge cake on sticks. Argabella was grateful to note that as soon as Lord Toby started talking about food, he stopped brooding and started drooling, which was more relaxing for everyone. When they topped the swell of a fetching hill, adorned with yellow buttercups, and finally beheld the Titan toothpicks sparkling on the western coast, a collective gasp escaped their mouths. Even Toby's jaw dropped, which was saying a lot when cheese wasn't in evidence.
Whoa! I didn't expect them to look that good,
Fia said.
They're beautiful, just like you said,
Argabella hastened to reassure her.
Definitely worth singing a song about.
Resplendent, spectacularly fetching, unabashedly stunning,
Lord Toby said, his face lit with wonder.
I've not been much of a world traveler till now, Gustav remarked. But I gotta say, those are some pretty special rocks.
Now hold the chicken a minute.
Paltrow lifted a hand to shield her eyes from the sun and squinted at the distant pillars.
Aren't rocks mostly supposed to stay still? I think I remember hearing somewhere that one of their distinguishing characteristics was that they didn't move. Yes, I'm sure of it, because during my training I kept tripping on rocks and thought they were sneaking up on me, but Cutter said, no, Paltrow, rocks don't move, so they can't sneak ipso facto. Except I think Cutter was wrong about that, and I still don't know what ipso facto means.
Cutter was right, Lord Toby said. Rocks don't move.
Paltrow pointed at the Titan toothpicks.
I swear one of them pillars moved, sir. Look, there it is again. It must not have gotten the memo about not moving.
Argabella squinted at the shining pillars of stone, and so did the rest of the party. Something had detached from the mass of pillars and was taking impossibly long strides in their direction.
That's no rock, Argabella said.
What is it?
Fia wondered aloud.
It's the thing from the sign! The thing that eats people with mustard! Gustav said. Flee! But not as fast as me.
He took off down the Buttercup Hill, heading back the way they'd come, leaving a trail of terror poops in his wake. Lord Toby growled at Fia.
In case I don't get a chance later, I told you so.
Fia drew her sword and her wicked shears.
Fine, you were right. Now shut up and help me fight this thing.
Argabella didn't want to fight. Running away seemed to be far more sensible at this point. But she couldn't let Fia fight alone. For the first time, she was able to resist her rabid urges and stand her ground, despite a bone-deep longing to hop into a log. She swung her lute around and strummed a powerful chord, trying to imbue her voice with as much confidence as possible, even though she was terrified, and sang an improvised song of obfuscation.
We are not food, no sir, Mr. Monster, we taste super bad. Oh, gods, we are not food, really, 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 you gotta believe me.
Her desperate song appeared to have no effect whatsoever. The colorful thing's long legs covered a vast distance with every second, and the distance it closed was specifically that distance which separated them. As it grew closer, they could tell that the thing from the Titan toothpicks was indeed not a rock at all, though it had much the same coloring. It was a spindly and severe-looking giant, with a nose the size of a battleship. Its only hair was a pair of aggressive eyebrows, and an enormous white mustache that fell from the upper lip like two foaming tides, which Argabella supposed meant it must be male. His skin was a curious mural of vegetal colors, yellow and green and deep purples, mixed with rich reds and browns, no blacks or blues of any kind. And it wasn't smooth by any means, but rather bumpy like an angry custard apple except for the tip of its schooner nose, which had greenish-purple layers to it reminiscent of an asparagus floret. His eyes were empty black pits, with only a diamond's glow deep in the socket. And he looked angry, or hungry, or maybe hangry, a hybrid of the two. As Argabella's song continued, the Dark Lord Toby's wispy beard waved like the tentacles of an irascible squid, and his clutching finger spewed green lightning into the sky, which arced toward the giant and was very impressive for a half second, until it turned into a flurry of pointed almost baguettes that dealt the giant approximately zero damage.
"I was kind of hoping," Fia said, "that you'd hit him with something a bit deadlier than bread."
"That wasn't what I intended," Lord Toby protested. "My battle casting is adversely affected by stress."
"So it's useless in an actual battle, is what I hear you saying."
"Well, it's not like our bard is helping. Everybody knows songs only help if they rhyme, and this one doesn't even have a chorus."
"They didn't teach me that in bard school,"
Argabella wailed, forgetting her song altogether.
"You'd think they would have mentioned that on the first day."
And then they had no more time to argue, for the giant arrived and reached out with a 6-foot-long hand to scoop up the 7-foot-tall Fia, leaving only her head visible in his gnarled and knobby yellow ochre fist. Argabella stopped playing her lute and cried out as the giant's mouth yawned wide, and he brought his hand toward those massive choppers, and she could see down his throat a dank, moistful cavern into which Fia would go spelunking and never return. The mighty Fia, who had been so sure that she could handle anything, screamed defiance at the giant as she was helpless to do anything else. Her arms pinned and her sword useless, and Argabella's heart screeched as her vision dimmed, her rabid psyche unable to handle the horror of it all, as she waited to hear huge teeth chomping down. Argabella woke, staring at the sky, with her entire back uncomfortably wet and stinging a bit.
What?
She said, trying to make her mind and mouth work.
Wet? Why?
She began to panic and thrash as she realized her arms and legs wouldn't move. She was trussed up like a holiday hen.
"Oh, welcome back to the land of consciousness," Gustav said.
Argabella turned her head and saw the billy goat lying next to her in a thin layer of pale orange liquid, his legs tied together like a man bun. Beyond him, she could see hints of the others, including Fia, also tied up and lying in an enormous ceramic baking dish. Even the oxen, Moxie and Doxy, were tied up at the far end and mooing dejectedly.
"You woke up just in time to be cooked up,"
he added. Clearly the goat had not run away fast enough.
"Cooked!"
she squeaked.
"Grilled, actually."
A voice rumbled from above. It was a deep, rolling, scratchy voice, as if three barrels of port had smoked 4,000 cigars and wanted to brag about it.
"Over an applewood fire. There are subtleties of flavors smoked into the meat that I find superior to oak. And the orange-lemon marinade in which you currently soak will add a top note of insouciant citrus as I crunch through your bones and slurp out your internal organs."
"Will there be mustard?"
Poltrow asked, which seemed like a waste of a question to Argabella. She could have asked to be released, for example, or begged for mercy, but instead inquired about condiments.
"Why would there be mustard?"
the deep voice said, a touch of querulousness in its tone.
"We saw a sign on the road that said you ate a lot of people with mustard,"
the rogue explained.
"Oh, yes, I did do that once, years ago. First I ran them through the meat grinder with spices and made a festive bratwurst out of them. And the only way to enjoy a bratwurst is with some fresh sauerkraut and mustard, yes. But it's foolish to assume I'd eat the same thing every time. When you have been eating as long as I have, you must become a gourmet or perish of boredom."
"Ah, that's wisdom right there," Lord Toby said. "I know what you mean."
"Do you?"
A huge, hovering triangle of flesh heaved into Argabella's sight, blocking her view of the sky, with two tremendous black, round, hair-lined orifices at the base, and falling from them a wintry cascade of whiskers that split across an unseen upper lip. The mass of flesh angled down until she could see the horrible, pitiless eye sockets regarding them from the boiled corncob head of the giant.
"Well, perhaps I should ask first, how long have you been eating, exactly?"
Toby continued, as if it were perfectly ordinary to have a conversation with a monstrous giant while marinating to improve one's tenderness.
"I have been eating for uncounted tens of thousands of years."
"Ah, a smidge longer than me, then," Toby admitted. "Still, I understand the impulse to seek variety in one's diet."
"That's surprisingly empathetic,"
the giant said.
"I don't get much of that from my food. For I must eat you, whether I wish to or not. Which is not to say I don't wish to, because I do. It's just that I have no choice. You have seen my brothers and sisters, yes?"
I don't think so."
"The pillars, the stones, what do you humans call them now?"
"The Titan toothpicks."
The giant sucked his teeth and winced.
"Oh, that's a terrible name. And I thought the God's Straws was bad. Well, that's what happens to me if I don't eat. I turn to stone, like my family before me. A beautiful, sparkly, many-colored stone, but dead and sadly hairless. I used to have a fantastic head of hair, you know, about 20,000 years ago. But now all I have left are my eyebrows and the mustache."
I might be able to whip up a handy tonic," Toby began, but the giant cut him off.
No, no, Never mind that. There's no use trying to bargain or beg for your life. There's nothing you can say that will make me act against the interests of my own survival. Here today, gone tomorrow, you know. So little food comes this way anymore. Better that we have a nice chat while I prepare side dishes. And then I promise to kill you quickly, with a nice pinch to the skull, before throwing you on the grill.
What's your name, sir, if you don't mind me asking? Poltro asked.
I am known by many names, some of them intended to be less than kind. Nostril Domus is a favorite of the local assorted Cretans. As is Nebuchadnezzar, Noseph of Nosereth, Nosy McConker, Booger McSchnoz, Beaky McSnotlocker, and Lord of the Sneeze. But my given name is Factory, and the songs and tales about my life that I like best call me Old Factory. In that familiar way, you know, wherein one is thought of with affection, but also implying that I have been around a long time, which is a truth. I knew mountains around here when they were but young eels. I smelled the world when it was in diapers, and remember well that terrible day when it became ill and shat out humans.
Argabella saw Factory daintily move a 20-pound bag of onions between thumb and forefinger across her vision, then heard him dump the lot onto a cutting board next to the dish in which they marinated. An unseen knife began to chop them.
Wow! If I wasn't already tied up and horizontal, I'd fall over with revelation,
Gustav said.
Wow, wow, wow. You know what I wish, Fia? I wish that Pooh Boy was still alive and with us right now. I would have loved to see his reaction to learning that he was actually Pooh.
That prompted Poltro to ask,
Are you speaking metaphorically, Olfactory? Because if we humans are the boom boom of a baby pal, sir, I'm wondering why you'd want to eat us.
I'm wondering where the boom boom came from, Fia said. I mean, where in the world were you putting these diapers? And who made the diapers? Because they had to be pretty big if they're going to fit a planet-sized backside, right? And now that Pell's grown up and not using diapers, where's all the boom boom going?
Arcabella thought Fia's questions only raised more.
And how'd you clean it all up?
She asked.
You'd need to divert a river at the very least, and then maybe you catapulted some payloads of baby powder in there? You had to do something, right? Because chafing is real.
Hey, if Pell plooped humans when she was sick,
Toby said, struck by inspiration,
there's no telling what she could squeeze out if we just gave her some mayonnaise we left out too long in the sun. A turtle hog, maybe. And if we gave her some dodgy oysters?
Oh, dang!
Then stand back, because here come the rhino gators.
Oh, this could be amazing!
Olfactory stopped chopping onions, and his mustache drooped, indicating that a frown had formed under the frothy waves of hair, and a deep cleft of worry yawned between his eyes.
I was speaking metaphorically. Of course,
he said, and a chorus of disappointed groans greeted this news. He slowly shook his massive head and returned to his onions.
I'm disheartened. Really, I was hoping for more elevated discourse than this.
Elevated? Oh, because you're a giant!
Poltro chuckled.
Good one, sir!
I'm not really accustomed to high society, but I can try to accommodate you,
Toby said.
That's going to be a tall order for me, Gustav added.
I'm not much for lofty words,
Archibella said, feeling quite liberated by her slyness.
I don't have a towering intellect.
Olfactory sighed and raised a single wild hedge of an eyebrow at Fia.
Well, what about you?
Fia made gentle sloshing sounds as she shook her head in the marinade.
I got nothing. I hate tall jokes, too.
Factory's mustache shook with laughter, and he threw his head back to laugh some more, affording them a spectacular view of his nostrils. It gave Argabella an idea. While the others tittered and giggled along, amused by Olfactory's laugh, the bard quietly sang a song she thought might have a better chance of working than telling him to ignore his hunger, as she tried before. Her subtle magic wasn't very effective at changing the fundamental nature of things, but encouraging what was already there? While rhyming? That she could do.
Giant nose of Nostradamus, be tickled as if by buzzing bees. Let loose your juicy phlegm in a most mighty sneeze. Sneeze, giant sneeze, just like a violent breeze. Give those giant lungs a squeeze and sneeze, giant sneeze.
The party was all sharing a mad sort of laugh together, and Poltro commented that this was a much more agreeable way to die than the shrieking business Lord Toby had predicted, when something horrific happened in less than a second. Olfactory was seized with the involuntary compulsion to sneeze, and as sometimes happens when a sneeze surprises even the sneezer, there was no time to cover one's mouth. And as sometimes more catastrophically happens, a glob of mucus was ejected with not insignificant speed from the back of the sneezer's throat. And said glob, a giant glob, it hardly needs to be said, first splattered every single occupant of the baking dish, displacing much of the orange-lemon marinade, then settled down upon them like a blanket. Warm and moist and a pale green that Argabella would have thought pretty on most anything else but a layer of mucus resting upon her torso. And then there were many howls and lamentations. Even Moxie and Doxie, the most placid of ruminants, became raucous oxen under the sudden application of olfactory snot. Far too late, the giant covered his mouth, and his brow curdled into an expression of deep embarrassment.
Oh, no. Oh, my,
he said.
My marinade. My luncheon. I'm so sorry. Oh, no. Ew. Gross.
Oh, really?
Fia shouted.
Gross! You think?
Factory made a retching noise as his gorge rose. His pimpled, cobbled eyelids closed as he reached out and scooped up the baking dish. The sky whirled in Argabella's vision, the tops of the Titan toothpicks briefly making an appearance, and then her stomach got left behind as they dropped precipitously before being upended onto warm sand, which immediately made everything worse. The howls and lamentations grew louder.
Sorry, so sorry, here. Take your weapons and free yourselves.
Fia's sword and shears fell from the sky, as did Poltro's sword and dagger and Argabella's lute.
I can't eat you like that. You're the opposite of delicious now. Just go.
Fia wasted no time. She rolled over to her shears and used them to clip through her twine, then freed everyone else as Olfactory continued to apologize.
You can take your oxen and your wagon, but I'm keeping all your food. I really do need to eat something. I'm just not fond of sandy boogers. It's always a lovely dinner until it's not.
Gargling and gagging, Olfactory shook the wagon upside down, pocketed everything that fell out, and shambled away, opening the distance that he had once closed until he was nothing more than a far-off, shimmering stone pillar, quivering a bit more than his fellows and possibly still horking. Argabella, although freed, still sat on the sand, dumbfounded and slimy.
Need a hand? Fia asked,
her face eclipsing the sun as she leaned over and held out a slime-covered mitt. Argabella gladly took it and stood, her fingers lingering in Fia's strong grip.
"Thanks,"
she murmured with a smile. She was about to say something entirely foolish when Poltro shouted,
"Tore enough of this rot! I'm for the ocean, I am!"
Before she could bolt, however, Lord Toby stepped on her long black cloak. The rogue landed on her face in the sand and shook herself, looking very much like a sugar-dusted donut.
"If you look clean, you might also look delicious," Toby said. "I'd rather live greasy than die tidy." "Let's harness the oxen and hurry to the south while we can."
Poltro stood and tried and failed to dust off her black equipage.
"Fair enough, my lord. Anything's better than being eaten by a moldy squash man. Right lucky that he sneezed when he did, weren't it?"
"Fortunate indeed," Toby sagely intoned. "Fortuna smiles on our happy band."
Argabella held her tongue. If they knew she had saved them, they might expect her to do it again, possibly on command. She shot a glance at Gustav. He flashed a goat-lipped grin and winked a yellow goat eye at her. So he had heard her sing that little song, but was keeping his mouth shut. What a sneakful little ungulate. Argabella winked back at him. She could be sneakful, too. 11. On a beach, festooned with sparkly, pinchy crabs. They had to travel only half a day before they came to a river in which they could wash off the sand and snot. While the rest of them argued about who should go first, Gustav didn't wait. He leapt into the river and swam back to shore and shook himself off, then repeated the procedure twice more. It was wide and shallow near the banks, deepening to a swift channel in the center, and there was a ferry platform with no visible ferryman, or indeed a ferry. There was, however, a sign that said, "If you can read this, congratulations. Olfactory didn't eat you. Ferry at dawn every day, rain or shine."
"How much is passage, I wonder?" Lord Toby said, and looked at Gustav.
"Hey, don't look at me, man. I don't have a purse full of coins. Wouldn't mind snacking on a purse right now, though. Are you using yours?"
"Purses are for wimps," Toby sniffed. "I use a fanny pack."
After they had all washed and set up camp for the evening, the crepuscular lord assaulted the sky with fingers of green lightning, and dinner fell out of it. Wee pillows of steaming soda bread. There was no butter to be had or anything else. Poltro checked behind at least 3 trees, and there was simply nothing to be hunted. But at least they wouldn't starve, and Moxie and Doxie had plenty of grass to graze on. Hunger continued to rankle after they crossed the river as well, for the ferryman turned out to be a rather surly gnome who insisted he had no food to spare. He told them he lived in a fortified burrow with multiple escape routes, in case Olfactory ever decided to wade across the river to eat him and his family and their bewildering brood of tiny yapping dogs. Gustav didn't like them. There were 12 or more lined up on the dock, barking incessantly as if they'd never seen an adventuring party.
"Hey, they aren't waiting around to eat a goat, are they?"
Gustav asked.
"They let me know when Nostradamus is coming," the gnome explained, tugging nervously on a glorious white beard that Toby eyed enviously. He wore a helmet covered in spikes that glistened with something greasy on the tips, and his armor was likewise tricked out. Those were all poisoned, he claimed, to discourage Factory from picking him up.
"Just don't touch me and you'll be fine," he said.
"So if your dogs are barking right now, how do you know when Factory is coming?"
Gustav asked.
"Oh, they sound different when there's real danger around. More growly, lots of teeth showing, that kind of thing. And the little red lights on their collars glow. Just one of my little gnomeric inventions."
"How many people have you ferried across the river this year?"
Argabella asked.
"You're the first in 3 years, actually."
And nobody has crossed going in the other direction?
Nope.
How do you make a living?
I get a stipend from Grinda the Sandwich down in Malefic Beach. She pays me to work here in case anyone gets past the giant. Says she wants to meet whoever can manage that. So you're doubly lucky, kids. You aren't in Factory's digestive system right now, and you get to meet Grinda immediately. That's no small thing.
Lord Toby frowned. And why is that?
She throws a heck of a party. She's connected, loaded, and not just with money. She has some pretty amazing potions. If you want to do anything about those three hairs you have on your chin...
The gnome waved at Toby's beard with a raised eyebrow.
There are many more than three,
Lord Toby shouted.
Sure, big guy. However many you have, she can make you grow more. I used to have it rough like you, but I joined a beard club for gnomes a couple years back, and now, look at me, it's a veritable thicket. Tough as dragon hide, too. I can let the dogs play tug-of-war with it and not lose a hair. I'll show you!
That won't be necessary, Fia said, and Gustav made a small sound of disappointment.
He would have liked to see that. The gnome shrugged.
Your loss! Anyway, don't go before I give you a fancy invitation to see the sandwich. You won't want to miss the opportunity.
We were going to see her anyway.
You were? Why's that?
Fia paused before answering, and Gustav saw her face doing things that meant she was still upset about Pooh Boy.
We need to tell her that her nephew's dead, and see if she can do anything about it.
Like, have a funeral?
No, like, magic.
Huh.
The gnome's eyebrows tried to rise, but were prevented from going far by the spiky poison helmet he wore.
A funeral announcement would definitely get her attention. She loves an excuse to dress up. You might have actually gotten in to see her without an invitation for that. Near impossible to see her otherwise. You have to do something extraordinary, like live through a giant attack.
There will be no funeral,
Fia shouted.
Because he's only a little dead.
Argabella put a hand on Fia's arm.
Barely deadful at all,
she assured the mighty and mightily upset fighter.
Definitely much closer to almost being alive.
Gustav shook his head at the mental fragility and psychological gymnastics of humans. Goats were stubborn, but Fia currently was acting downright foolish. Pooh Boy was 100% dead. The mayor of Deadsville, the emperor of not getting back up again, a bowl of dead amame, the president of the board of education, the deaditor-in-chief. Gustav wished the yappy little dogs were somewhat closer to that state as they insisted on barking and yapping while the party disembarked. Lowering his horns at them in a menacing sort of way, he used his tail to swat pellets in every direction to emphasize his superiority. For his part, the ferryman shucked his armor and shooed the dogs off, stomping all over Gustav's pellets and grumbling about curry. He might have muttered a terse welcome to the Earldon of Burdell as they crossed the river that formed the border with Grunting. Once they were all safely standing on land again, the gnome withdrew a stiff envelope from a secret compartment in his helmet and held it out with much ceremonial bowing. Toby began to take it, but Fia snatched it up first.
I should be the one to tell her,
she said, voice husky with gravitas. Gustav hoped Lord Toby would protest, and he did.
My dear, where are you going to put the...
Fia grabbed him by the throat and squeezed, shaking her head.
I'm not your dear.
Right.
Lord Toby choked out.
Sorry.
Fia let him go. And the letter disappeared inside her cloak.
And I have pockets.
The fairy gnome said that the border town of Petrel wasn't far, and they could get some basic supplies there, then assured them that once they arrived in Malefic Beach, they'd have no trouble finding Grinda's place.
You can ask around, but it's the biggest bloody domain there is.
And Malefic Beach would be a better place to restock for a longer journey.
You've got your regular merchants, of course, but I'd recommend a cheesemonger in the Goblin Market by the name of Hornswoggle.
Argabella giggled.
He's really named Hornswoggle?
Don't let the name worry you. He's scrupulous to a fault, and has an incredible inventory, anything you could ever want. He even has some of that magic elvish moose cheese.
Elvish cheese?